Welcome back, Red Spotters. No, I am not Kyle Lara, and thank God. I'm Alexis Soto, and I am hosting today's To the Table, as I'm going to call it. And I am joined by Peter Martinez, and as has been mentioned before, this is the program in which each of us recommends a movie that we hadn't seen before to the other, then we come to the table, even though there's no table here. But, you know, semantics.
This is a podcast. They didn't know that.
Well,
you ruined the entire show.
I mean, I think it's always better to be straightforward and transparent with our viewers. Don't you think so?
What are you talking about? You voted for Hillary.
I did, proudly so, and I do it again. You voted for Hillary, too.
Lies.
Fake news?
Fake news.
Fake news.
Okay.
So, you recommended...
I recommended to you
mm-hmm.
Snowpiercer.
Because that is a movie that you own and love.
Yes. And you recommended to me mm-hmm. The Place Beyond the Pines.
Right. Because I had recently seen it,
yes.
And I would figure it'd be an interesting discussion to talk about. Not necessarily that I love the movie, but just to get that out of the way. I when I saw Place Beyond the Pines, I saw something that was different. It was more, it's definitely an indie style film, and I had some unresolved feelings about it that I'm sure we could get through if you had seen it, and I needed a movie to come up with that you hadn't seen before. So I give you that. So we'll begin with The Place Beyond the Pines. This is a film that came out way back in 2012. It was...
Was it 2012?
It was 2012.
Oh, okay.
And it got a bunch of really rave reviews from a bunch of movie festivals. I know Chris Stuckman was a big supporter of this movie when this came out. And it has a robust cast. It has
really
Ryan,
great cast.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper, Rose Byrne, Ava Mendez, Dane DeHaan.
Did you say Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dane DeHaan, Mahershala Ali
yes.
is also in this.
Did you say Mads Mikkelsen?
Not Mads Mikkelsen, Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn. Same thing.
Ben Mendelsohn.
I think... Oh, what's yeah. her name?
Rose Byrne.
Is it Eva Mendez?
Eva Mendez, yeah.
Yes. Okay. There we go. Is that everyone?
Mostly.
We'll say
there's somebody else that I don't know his name. He played the son of Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
He was also in Brooklyn. He played the boyfriend to Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, okay.
The Italian.
Okay.
That's why I've heard that voice before, so I'm like, I don't know why he had that accent, but we'll get to that when we get
yeah,
there,
we'll
in
that.
This movie in particular. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is available on Netflix for those who want to see it. And I was curious about this mainly because of the cast. And I think Ryan Gosling in particular is what sold me because he picks a lot of really interesting projects.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those actors that kind of has gone beyond what people would perceive of him to be. And I think...
He always tries to pick good films.
I think he's good in any movie he is.
Mm-hmm.
He always does a variety of different things. And I think he was good here as far as... I think this movie, for me, what worked the best was the performances.
Well, let's give an overview of the story.
Okay,
what do you think?
Go ahead.
Though, it basically...
It's kind of like a three-part thing?
Yes, sort of like a three-part thing. It starts with Ryan Gosling, and it ends with his son. And it's this generational story about the mistakes and sort of the way that our decisions influence us into the future and even beyond that and becomes generational. And you sort of gave your reason for why you recommended it to me. I'll just give my overall feelings of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I did. I genuinely did. I did have some issues with it, but overall, honestly, I did enjoy it. And it the great thing is I thought it was going to be a slow film. And when I watched it, it was really late at night, so I'm like, I'm probably going to fall asleep. But
it's interesting, though.
Because it's generational, it really has to pick up the pace.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just starts off, like, right away, it's like, he meets Eva Mendes' character, and it's like, oh, hey, let's go back to my place. By the way, you got a son. Da-da-da-da-da. And it just goes. And I think that's both a positive and a negative. But in the very beginning, I didn't know that was the story structure. So
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was like, it really kind of it took a turn. I was like, okay, when spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oh, this whole show is going to be spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler alert. When Ryan Gosling's character dies, mm-hmm. this all of a sudden becomes Bradley Cooper's movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's happening here? I mean, great. Yeah. He's great. I like that. But I'm like, I didn't see it coming. I assumed it was going to be the entire film. He was going to be in that thing. But then it turns out that every single act in this movie, it's its own kind of self-contained part of the story. Mm-hmm. But like you said, it's very generational, because ultimately where it goes is the first act is Ryan Gosling trying to work with... Let's go through this act by act very mm-hmm. quickly. So the very first act, you have Ryan Gosling, who is a carnival guy, motorcycle person, mm-hmm. who comes back to this town where Eva Mendes, he used to date her or something, and then
it was like a one-night stand,
pretty much.
Had a kid,
yeah.
And he's basically fighting to try to find his way right. to his kid's life.
But the thing is that she is already living with somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's Mahershala Ali, who she's living with him and supporting her and everything.
Yeah, she's kind of moved on with him, and it's like, why is she going to leave him of this guy supporting her?
And Ryan Gosling is not exactly making the best decisions into introducing himself into their lives.
Yeah.
In fact, it's more of an intrusion.
Yes. But that's his son. And, yeah. and you know, he's and right off the bat, you do feel for him. You can tell this is a guy who never made the best life decisions, but he does come off as a good guy, and that he wants to do the right thing. He's, you know, I never grew up with
a
dad.
He wants to be with his son.
But he wants to be with his son, and he's like, I want to take care of you. I'm going to take care of his son, but also Eva Mendes. So he's very much, he wants to take away Mahershala Ali's, you know,
right.
his place that he's kind of taken over.
But again, it's like, he goes about the wrong way.
He does it the wrong
completely.
Way.
Completely. First of all, he introduces himself to Ben Mendelsohn's character. They kind of live in the same area. Mm-hmm. They work together fixing motorcycle parts. And because Ryan Gosling's character is a unique, he's a famous motorcycle rider, that it kind of goes all hell or high water a little bit.
A
little bit of the movie, it's kind of like, it's a routine of him robbing banks, mm-hmm. and that's how he gets all the money to support his son. He ends up dropping, and there's this nice little moment where it's just the three of them, Ryan Gosling, Eva Mendes, and their son, mm-hmm. and they're getting their picture taken, like when they're giving the baby the ice cream, and she's just crying because she can't believe it's actually happened. That was a really, really good moment right there.
And I think you kind of tell she'd rather be with him than with Mahershala Ali, but the fact is, she has a stable life with him. And you could tell she ain't rolling in the bucks either, and she's like, why am I going to give up, you know, this steady life, this house, especially because I not only do I have to take care of my kid, but my mom,
he's
too.
He's not reliable
and
enough.
He was a carny that just
and
sort of
shady,
drove into
yeah.
town, pretty shady, which, you know, especially the way, what happens right after that,
right.
you could tell he was. So, like you said, he starts to try and rob banks to
But that's
to get
not
money.
What does him in initially. It's the fact that he beat up Mahershala Ali in his own fucking house. And I'm like, what's going through your mind to think that's going to end up well for you?
These things, he just wants to be with this kid. But to me, it was, for the character, it was a believable reaction.
Yeah.
And a misreaction, I guess, the way he did that. And the way he tried to go on a heist by himself turned out terribly wrong, and he ended
up... No, that went really, really wrong.
He ended up dying
because
of it. Being shot by...
shot and then also...
killed. Okay. Fell out the window.
Yeah.
By, what's his name?
Bradley Cooper. And that's how we get introduced to the next... act in this movie, where Bradley Cooper is a police officer, a newly police recruit, and when he shoots Ryan Gosling shoots him back, so he's also injured, I think in the leg or something, and he's out for quite some time. And what's interesting is that entire section of the movie was really kind of an introspective into how things would work with because he was being investigated immediately thereafter to see
anything? Almost like each section of the film becomes sort of its own thing.
That became
a little bit of a cop drama in the middle, especially with Ray Liotta.
Exactly. Well, of course it's Ray Liotta. The thing is like it turns out that Bradley Cooper comes across these corrupt cops. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, they barge into Eva Mendes's home because they know that Ryan Gosling probably left money. But they're not there officially. They're there on their own time.
On their own time.
To just take the money for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, not to turn it in for evidence to incriminate her, but to use that money to spend it on themselves. And they want to, they're pretty much recruiting Bradley Cooper to be in their fold, which was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Huge, huge mistake. And then he tried, first of all, that scene where Radiota's like, follow me. And
he yeah.
follows him all the way to the woods. And I'm like,
and I, because especially how the first act went, it's like he could die right here
mm-hmm.
in the film.
Yeah.
There was that sense. And luckily, he was smart enough to just say, hell no, back it up and drive the hell out of there. Not many movie characters are smart enough to do that when they're put in those scenarios.
No.
So I give like, the film
why
credit
did he
for that.
Follow him all the way, though? I would have turned away immediately, just like, fuck it, I'm going to my father, who happens to be a judge, by the
yes.
way. I would have gone to him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see, you can almost see before that even happens that they're trying to stop him from getting to his father.
Yeah.
Like, where are you going? You know?
But I also like, and this is what I think the story is mostly focused on, his deep, I don't know about regret, but just sadness and guilt about killing Ryan Gosling. And
because of the
him
baby
without his
that,
son.
The baby that left behind, because he himself has a one-year-old baby, which...
But also, he shot first.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of goes into the whole police investigation thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to admit to it, but that's something that really just...
Would you admit to that? For career-wise, it's nuts.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
It just puts you in a difficult situation, and you can see it eat him up inside,
mm-hmm.
and it continues on to Act 3.
But you also see in this particular act, he goes from, like, being very afraid of kind of really being politically savvy about
mm-hmm.
the whole thing. I think his father kind of, because his father is an elected judge from what I can gather, he pretty much has more or less the skills to be a politician. As we see in Act 3, he's running for the Attorney General position. He's, at that point, an established politician by the
mm-hmm.
time we get there. Because, again, because of the cops that get put away, he gets promoted
mm-hmm.
to assistant DA for that deal that he made almost instantly.
And you know, and the thing is, because at the beginning when we first see him, he just wants to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have these political ambitions.
No, he doesn't want nothing to do with that at all.
His family, even his wife, is pushing him into that corner.
Yeah.
He's like, this is who I am. And because of the circumstances, he sort of realizes that potential and starts going for those political ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
Which then when we cut to, I think it's 15 years later,
yeah.
at his father's funeral, his life has been consumed by these political ambitions. And I think it's sort of become a way to escape his guilt.
Well, yeah, because at that point, he and his wife are no longer together.
Yes.
And his son is very estranged.
Piece of shit.
Well, he's a piece of shit to begin with.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how that happened.
Uh-huh.
They're very... they're not that close, as you can tell.
I think you can infer that, you know, and especially because they have that scene with him in the second act where he's talking to his therapist. And he's like, it doesn't help that there's a baby. Like he almost feels guilty for being a father.
Yeah.
And he wants to push that
away from his life.
And so he pushes his wife and son away as much as he possibly can, and he just dives into his political career because it gives him a sense of purpose, and maybe it just helps him not think about those kind of things.
So where did the kid get the accent from? Is that just that's my question.
I kind of forgave it. I thought, like, my thing is, like, maybe he moved away with his mom, and from being where he was, that's where he attained that accent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moves back with his dad, of course, in the Act 3.
Which then again goes into that twist, which you saw coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
Is he meets Dane DeHaan.
Mm-hmm.
Same age. Also happens to be the son of Ryan Gosling.
And
so the son of Bradley Cooper becomes best friends with the son of Ryan Gosling.
Yes. Which, Dane DeHaan being Ryan Gosling's son, I call BS.
What?
What? They look nothing alike.
They have blonde hair. It works.
They have blonde hair. It works.
Come on. They don't need to really... Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
It's nothing. It was just an offhand comment. No, but that's where you really dive into, I feel, the weakest portion of the film.
Yeah.
Because then it almost becomes like a high school drama. Not a high school, yeah, but like a coming of age.
Well, because we focus on these two teenagers in high school. And with that, like, you have a different kind of set of complications. Mm-hmm. My main issue with it was the almost abrupt character or identity change in Dane DeHaan, mm-hmm, to where he doesn't seem anything special. He's like pretty much a stoner in high school, but all of a sudden he up and decides to become a murderer, or a gunman, or like what? Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden he feels this, of course, with every child out there that wants to know more about their parents who they never met, of course they want to go down that road. But it just seems like the more he found out about his father, the more he became like him. Maybe it was always there. I don't know what it was, but it felt that the change was way too soon for me.
After, I can kind of buy it, because after seeing that this guy, who's kind of a piece of shit to you, that just uses you, pretends to be your friend, you know, his dad was the one that killed your dad, and then he just beats the shit out of you in front of everyone at this party. Emotions are high. He's not a smart kid to begin with. I think you could see it being pushed at least to that edge. Of course, he doesn't go through with it, and we'll get to that. But I can sort of buy it. But then it also comes to some of my negatives with the story structure, is that it just feels like this could have been like a 4-hour. Each one of these sections could have been an entire movie on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can really see that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think it works perfectly the way, especially from the first third to into the second part.
Right.
I think it works really well. But there are sections of the story where it just feels rushed.
Yeah.
Because of the story structure. Its ambition kind of makes it, injures it a bit, I feel. And I think it's most evident in the third part. Mm-hmm. Especially because, and to wrap up what happens in the third part, they're at a party, he realizes his dad...
killed his dad.
His friend killed his, yeah, dad. He brings a gun the next day because he got the shit beat out of him by his friend. And then he confronts his friend. Does he shoot? I can't remember. He shot him, right? Or he did something to him.
He knocked him out.
He knocked him out. But
Looked like he shot him.
Yeah.
I thought he did kill him. But it just turns out he knocked him out unconscious.
And then
kidnapped his dad.
Took his dad, which is Bradley Cooper, to the middle of the woods. And he wants to kill him, but Bradley Cooper like breaks down and he's like, I'm sorry. Which, you know, he's been holding that in this
entire
time.
That's the thing, though. It's like with Bradley Cooper, it's like... I know how the movie is kind of presenting that the main protagonist is Ryan Gosling and Dane DeHaan. But I kind of felt more sympathetic for Bradley Cooper at the end of the day.
Bradley Cooper had a really good story going in that, mm-hmm, second part, and I kind of didn't like where it ended.
It didn't really... It wasn't satisfying, I think, to,
yeah,
the point.
And
but
like,
I still felt more for him than I did for anybody else. I don't know
really
what that was. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just Bradley Cooper. But it's like Ryan Gosling always felt a bit... like I can't connect with somebody like that. That was
who
just,
makes stupid decisions.
And then Dane DeHaan, which makes stupider decisions.
Yeah.
So.
But again, it goes to this whole thing of like mistakes being passed down generationally.
Yeah.
And the way that goes. For me, the negatives come most apparent in the third act, because the son character, I really felt nothing for him. I feel like they didn't really attempt anything for him. Bradley Cooper's son.
Yeah.
Like, especially because at the very end, it's like, okay, he wins his race and his son is there by his side. And it felt like that was supposed to be something.
A moment.
But because you never really got any real interaction between him and his son,
mm-hmm,
that dug deeper than just like, I don't connect with you.
Yeah.
And this son really, he never gave glimpses of a deeper character behind just, he's a piece of shit who didn't have his dad around, so he's a piece of shit. So at the very end, when it's just like, oh, he's by his side, and that's supposed to be a moment, I feel if you had a full feature film with just that, you could have had scenes where that connected and that could have worked.
The more I'm thinking about it, the more this could have been a trilogy, really.
Yeah, it could have been. Although I do love its ambition of just trying to tell this generational story in one film.
And that's part of the reason why I recommended it to you, because it is ambitious and it yeah. is different. And I think...
I think it was directed very well.
Yeah, definitely.
And the performances... one thing we haven't really touched on, I think this director works really well with having the actors give really believable performances.
Eva Mendes is the best I've ever seen
yes,
her in this.
Yes, and each actor, they feel... It doesn't feel like... How do I put this? It really feels like he works well with actors mm-hmm. and that he makes them feel realistic.
Yeah.
And I know that's the actor's job to begin with, but when they're like when they have little tics, when they're talking and stuff like that, I'm like, this feels very believable. Believable conversation is going on. And I think that really works when you're jumping, you know, from generation, from character to character, and things have to move along quickly in that way. I think it really helps that... And I do really like the way it ended with Dane DeHaan's character.
Yeah.
The way he left home, you know, at 15.
Yeah.
And, you know...
It ends where it began.
Yeah. He sends the last thing he sends his mother is a picture of all of them when they were... The one time they were a family. And he sort of rides off in the motorcycle. And the way it ended, I'm like, I did really like this story. I thought it was ambitious.
Nice palate cleanser, I would say. Different.
Yeah. And... It's not that I wish it was broken up into different movies. Maybe if it just went for it and was just like sort of like a 3-hour film, just for little scenes here yeah. and there, just to give it a little bit more. Because especially from the second act going into the third act, I felt you could have used more time, especially yeah. with Dane DeHaan's character.
Yeah. I mean, we jump 15 years into the future, mm-hmm. like out of nowhere.
And certain actors are just sort of there. They don't yeah. get much to do at all. Like Rose Byrne, Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
I think I say it different every time I say his name.
Mahershala.
Mahershala?
It's Mahershala Ali.
Mahershala Ali. He's really just there.
Yeah.
He doesn't... He's
good. He's though. But he's just good, there.
But he's yeah. just there. And I think they did try to give him a moment with Dane DeHaan, but I feel like you could have done much more with him.
Have you seen Moonlight?
With his character? Yes.
Okay, because I was thinking of Moonlight a lot in this, because Moonlight yes. does that three-part structure. Mm-hmm. The difference, though, is the focus is singular on yes. one person at different stages of his life.
And I think that's why it works better.
And Moonlight, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you're staying with that. You're staying with the same character, so you see them evolve, and I think it just works better.
By the way, Mahershala is amazing in Moonlight, too.
Yes.
Like, he was...
He deserved that. Did he get an Oscar?
Yeah, he got it.
He deserved that Oscar.
Got yeah. it, man. That's great.
Overall, I'm glad you recommended this to me.
Yeah.
Because scrolling through Netflix, I would see it a lot, and I was just like...
Hesitant. Yeah, me too.
I'd probably like it, but I don't know. And that's why I like this series, because it forces us
to
see different things. And I am glad that I saw it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a perfect film. I do, like I said, there is issues, but those issues sort of have to be there because of its ambitious, the way the story is told. And I'm really glad that it wasn't told in that way. So you got to take the good with the bad. Overall, I think it was a good recommendation.
For those who are listening, it's on Netflix if you want to go ahead and watch
it. Check it out.
It's an interesting watch. And yeah, you should, even though we kind of just... ruined it, but okay, just go ahead and watch it. Doesn't matter.
There's a difference between hearing it and seeing the film.
There very much is so.
Going into our second film, mm-hmm. I recommended to you Snowpiercer, because I really felt like this was a film that was up your alley.
I think it was. Yeah.
That you would like. It's not typical sort of action-adventure fare.
Oh, not at all.
It seems to be on its surface. Especially like a Hollywood type film mm-hmm. is from director Bong Joon-ho,
who is a Korean, correct? I think you're like
Korean director. Yes,
yeah. It's a Korean director, and it also has two Korean stars in it too.
Yes,
so I think it was an international film.
Yes, he directed Okja, and he also directed
On Netflix, by the way.
Yes, and another is sort of horror film, not really. It's more like a creature feature. Called The Host, which I also really enjoy. I'm pretty sure that was him. Yeah.
It seems to me, just based on watching Snowpiercer and hearing the descriptions of these other films he's done, that going for fucked up shit is right up his alley.
He likes to combine just everything, just every sort of like.
Well, this movie in particular is a combination of different things. I'd say. Here's where I would. Okay, so basically,
let's start the story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, you go ahead.
Okay. A story of a sneer. Snowpiercer is a message that I think we're inclined to hear is the thing about global warming and climate change. But I find it so. What basically happens is some scientists come up with this this chemical that they plan to disperse into the air, and that's going to solve all their problems. By the way, if anybody ever thought that, go fuck yourselves, because literally you will be the end of us. How do you think for 1 second that dispersing some fucking chemical into the air is going to fix climate change? Oh, it inadvertently sparked an ice age. My bad. Go fuck yourselves. This is why we're doomed to extinction. Anyway, this
happens. Very lighthearted.
This happens, but somebody, I think, what was the name? Waylon or something? The old guy's name. Yes. The company with the W. I want to say Waylon or something.
I think that's aliens, though, isn't that?
Maybe
or
might
maybe
be.
They have the same name.
Maybe
let's
I don't
just
know.
Say Waylon.
Or Windsor? Wilson?
Yeah,
Wilson?
Something like that.
Something like that. Anyway, not Wilson Fisk. I was watching Daredevil right now. It's a great show. What happens here is this man, who is portrayed by Ed Harris in this film, who runs this company, is preparing for that event because he saw it coming. So he makes this self-sustainable locomotive that is all-encompassing in that it has its own environment. Mm-hmm.
It's self-sustainable.
Right, self-sustainable environment, self-running.
And it never stops.
It never stops. And it takes an entire year for it to cross the globe, as we see in this movie. And basically, obviously, as you might have guessed, this is a post-apocalyptic movie. And it takes place 17 years after that event, in which, predictably, as things go in post-apocalyptic terms, cruel and unfair class system is formed from those who live...
The last surviving humans.
Right, the last... By the way, all humans are dead except the ones that live on this train. But on this train, there is a class system that is formed from those who live in the front of the train and those who live in the back of the train. Mm-hmm. As in the ones who are in the front are pretty much... Think of Hunger Games, basically.
Yes.
Think of it like the first... The front of the train is like the capital and the back of the train is like District 12. Or hell, even District 13, which was burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. But...
And basically the entire film... Just in general aspects is the people at the very back of the train trying to overtake the class system.
Mm-hmm.
And
it happens several times.
Make it all the way to the front to take over the train.
The movie begins with that already happening. Mm-hmm. It's in motion. There are plans. We begin with Chris Evans, who is... Damn. Curtis. He plays... His character's name is Curtis, and his best friend is... Edgar, and he's also you also have there John Hurt, Octavia Spencer, and so on and so forth, who live there in the back. And when we begin the film, I love how it wastes no time in trying to convince people to rebel. We're already of the mind that we're going to go ahead and rebel, and we're going to go to the front of the train because we're done with this shit. And you see almost immediately the conditions are so poor to the point where it's not even worth discussing. But they also establish that there have been previous rebellions in the past
that have failed. Mm-hmm. And the very beginning of the film, it starts with you learning... just spending time with these characters at the back, because these are the people you're going to follow from the back of the train all the way to the front.
Right.
And it establishes who they are and what they're trying to do and some of the certain issues that each of them has.
It's very interesting, all of it, because it creates this kind of world, if you will, where like there have been many people who were all-lifers that have been on this train the entire life that had never seen Earth. There have been those... who were only on Earth for a short period of time. Those that have been along. There's this interesting mix of it. But it kind of, in a weird sense, has its own kind of mythology in a way.
I think this film has is an example of some of the best world building.
Yes, there it is. That's the term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it starts with... The film, it just starts with them beginning the rebellion.
Yeah.
As you follow Chris Evans and all the characters you've seen... they eventually meet up with the Korean actors, which I don't think either of us know their names, which is a shame because I think they did both really good.
They were outstanding.
Yes.
They were outstanding in here.
He's a bomb? Yeah. Or no, he's a technician. He understands the lock. So they get him out of this sort of prison they have them in, which is, it looks almost where they keep cadavers. In morgues. And their daughter, because they're addicted to...
Chronote, this drug thing.
Mm-hmm. That's also explosive.
Right, and that's a different thread that's cleverly revealed at the very end, which is very clever, as I said. They recruit these two technicians to open the doorways as they keep going along. But one of the things that they discover, that Curtis discovers, is that as far as the back of the train is concerned, those troops don't have any bullets in those guns.
Yes. That was the thing. Bullets, they believe, have been extinct for a while now. And that's one of the reasons why they initiate their rebellion. Because they're like, we don't believe that they have any more bullets. They've gone extinct, and we're going to go ahead and do this. And from there, it's just a fight from beginning to end through each train car. And each train car just is so unique.
Right.
And wonderful, just the world of this train, I found endlessly interesting.
Yeah, and I want to get to that right now, but it's also worth noting, this movie is just a nice combination of so many different genres. Like, you have a lot of good action, a lot of, pouring drama. You have some interesting comedy there as well, and then some really, really kooky, wacky things that happen. And I think one of the best parts about this movie is as they're making their way through the locomotive, it's like discovering, it's like with every passing car of the train that they go through, it's a new and fantastical world. Part of part of what makes this movie so special is experiencing what they're experiencing. It's just like this train is a world unto in itself,
which they've never seen.
Yeah. And it's all visually stunning as well. And it's all very creative as well, too.
Probably one of my favorite characters was Tilda Swinton. She was amazing in this.
Yeah, I was sad to lose her so quick, though.
But that's awesome, though. Because, like you said, this film, unlike...
We lose a lot of characters, but we lose all of them, pretty much.
You lose a lot of them. And
this is a real Hunger Games right here, by the way.
It's scenarios that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
Like, probably one of the best action, if the best action scene in the film, is when they make it to a certain train car, and there's all these guys with the masks, and they got the axes, and they're gonna fight them and take them all on, because that's when they reach a tunnel. And it's supposed to be completely dark for, like, 15 minutes, and they're like, this is where we have night vision goggles, and we're gonna just destroy this rebellion right here and now. And at the beginning, it's brutal. They are just slaughtering them.
Yeah.
Until,
in the middle of it, it's like, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. And that's where sort of like the kookiness
right.
comes about.
I wouldn't call it a culture, but close to that on this train that is formed in these 17 years. And you see that when you get to that really psycho yet really fun scene with the children in the classroom. Like that,
it's gone to the point where they worship the train, almost.
They worship him in particular.
Yes.
He is the god. Windsor or Wilson or whatever the guy.
Mm-hmm. Who created this train. And... We might be skipping over a lot of things, but
go watch it. Yeah.
When they eventually reach the end, and before they even get to the head man in charge, that exchange between the technician who's been opening the doors and Curtis, or Chris Evans' character, where he's basically just says, like, why this? You have this immense sense of guilt in him and regret throughout the entire film.
You don't really get a sense as to what that is until that monologue. I was blown away.
When she says, like, what kills me is I know what baby tastes like. Like, that's
because basically
dark and terrible.
It turns out, should we reveal the twist of it?
Yeah, this is all spoilers.
It's just like it is such an amazing moment when he, like, unloads off of that, because he was one of the first people that became a cannibal and was eating people to survive. And he was telling how he killed this woman and to, just to get the baby, because the baby is what tastes the best, apparently. Mm-hmm. And it was John Hurt's character at the time that cut off his own arm and gave it to Chris Evans and said, "If you're so hungry, eat this." And then sooner
rather that's what caused them to band together. Right, and they all started
other people off limbs. Yeah, cut off their limbs, and that baby was Edgar.
Yeah.
The kind of de facto little brother to Chris Evans in the beginning of the film.
Who died halfway through the film. Maybe not even halfway. Who he let die in order to just catch what's her name? Tilda Swinton's character. So when it's like, those are certain twists and turns that you never see with these kind of films. And I was like, this is awesome. This
but
is
I mean, the horror mm-hmm. and the shock of that. You didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming. That was great, of that and, particular scene.
And also the fact that he had attempted to cut off his own arm, but he was never able to. Yeah. He has the scars. And the other twist.
Wait, before we get to the big mm-hmm. one, there was a side thing with the Korean actor, with the entire time he was plotting the Cronut explosion. Were you going to go with that one or the bigger one?
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with that
okay,
one.
Okay, go ahead. Go with that one.
Where this entire time you think he's just this stupid druggie
yeah.
who just give me the Cronut, give me the Cronut, give me the Cronut.
And he's acting bizarrely the entire time. Mm-hmm. But then...
But they set it up like in certain scenarios. Yeah. Like when he told his daughter, like, "Hey, look out the window. I want you to see this."
Yeah.
He had been charting the years by looking at this certain plane and seeing how much snow was on top of it. And he saw year by year, snow had been falling away, which meant that it was getting warmer and warmer.
It was melting.
It was melting. So his thing is like, we need to leave this train. We you know, it's we're at the point where it's time to leave and we can start a new life on Earth again. And the entire point of gathering all the Cronuts was to blow up
because it's flammable. Door. They yes. established that it's very flammable, mm-hmm. and I thought that was also very clever because like it's not something you consider until he pointed it out. Oh wait a minute, he has a point here. Maybe he should get the fuck out of this train.
And you want to talk about the third twist?
The third twist, which was probably the most fucked up thing.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead. You leave that discussion.
You finally get to... what's his name?
I'm going to look it up because I'm tired of guessing.
Do, 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 do. No, you get to the actor. What's his name?
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris, which Ed Harris did... I thought he had an amazing performance playing this guy... who would essentially become God on this train. And...
Literally. He's, yes. Like, and you get to that right now.
And what you discover is, a long time ago, him and... what's his name?
John Hurt?
John Hurt had created a pact in which they viewed, or at least Ed Harris viewed the train as this ecosystem. And that... when it reached a certain point, when there was too many people on the train and they felt like they wouldn't be able to sustain it, they would stage an uprising. Him and John Hurt.
It was all engineered.
It was all engineered.
It's pretty much them trying to simulate natural selection or something.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because in the beginning, when Tilda Swinton says, approximately 74% of you will die. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how many die by the time we get to the end. It was all staged.
And then there's that, not only that, but at the very beginning when John Hurt is
Wilford,
talking...
It's Wilford.
Wilford, that's who he is.
Well, not Wilfred, Wilford.
Wilford, okay. Wilford. when John Hurt is talking to Chris Evans' character, and I think it's after they'd won the battle, and you could tell John Hurt is like, oh shit, this wasn't supposed to go down like this. But they were talking, and you could tell John Hurt has a lot of regret, and he's like, when you get to the front... don't trust anything that he tells
you. Don't let him talk.
Yeah. So, and you could tell he got manipulated a long time ago by Wilford.
Yeah.
And so it's this great scene where he's basically saying, I want you to take my place as the train
master.
It
was fucking, it was insane because it was also at the same time horrifying.
Yes.
It was horrifying. All of the stuff that was going on, like what he intended. And then for... maybe it was just me, but did you get the impression for a couple seconds he was actually considering Chris Evans?
Yes. I completely, like, he just has him like, here, you know, just, he's like, you probably forgot what it was like to be alone, don't you? And he just had him stand in front of the engine and just, like, just take it in. And you could tell how conflicted he was. Because in a very dark way, Ed Harris almost has a point. You know, you can't just let... This is a very limited train. Mm-hmm. You can't let population just spin out of control. They were only able to survive that long because of the terrible things that they were doing. But also... completely fucked up, you know? But I love how in the end when he... Also, the children. The children.
Oh my god, and you wanna...
So what really are they, fucked up.
What happened to them there?
They were... Well, at the very beginning, what's her name?
Octavia Spencer.
Octavia Spencer had lost, I think it was a son?
Timmy. Her son.
And at the very beginning... From the front, they were coming in and taking these tiny children, and they were measuring them, and you had no idea why. At the very end, you find out why. They were having them put into the train in these little...
Slots,
and because they had started losing parts, and they, night and day, have them basically playing out as parts of the train. And Ed Harris is like, yeah, it's something we have to do. It's necessary. But I love how it really completed the arc of Curtis, or Chris Evans' character, at the end to save Timmy's life. He sacrifices his arm.
Yeah.
He puts it through the gear to take him out, and he loses it. Finally, you know, being able to sacrifice and do what he needs to do.
He chooses the right path.
Yes. And in the end...
All the while, the Kronos explodes.
And just destroys the train.
Yeah, that, which... A lot of people died?
Yeah.
Mainly everybody?
Mainly probably everyone died. I mean, everyone in the back was already dead at that point.
Yeah.
I think, what was it? They left 17... It was either 7 or 17 people alive.
Yeah.
Because he said to commemorate the anniversary of the train.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, it does end hopeful. You know, it ends with... Little Timmy.
And what's her name? I don't... Yona or something. She walks out with him. They're the only survivors.
Because her father and Chris Evans had protected them in the explosion. That was the only way they were able to survive. But to me, it's a hell of a... It's just, to me, even though it's very much small film that took place on this train, it was a very epic story.
Yeah.
Just starting from the beginning and reaching the end and the way it combines.
What did you make of that last shot with them looking at the polar bear? And looking at... with the polar bear looking back at them.
To me, that signifies, you know, hope. The future. This polar bear is alive. Because before, they said... They thought all life on Earth was dead. The only thing that was alive. Even the fish, the bears, the birds,
those
everything.
Poor fish.
They're all frozen and dead. oh, well. No, but... That, to me, that was a signifier of hope. And this director, he's very much... is always very political with his films. And then, you haven't seen Okja, but, I mean, from the trailer, you can guess.
By the way, back to those fish. If this had been Finding Dory, they would have lived.
Yes.
Which we all know how that ended.
Yes. Yes, they would have.
Just to, you know, bring it up to your face and see how you'd react. Very much so. But so, back to Snowpiercer.
Yes. What did you feel about this film? Because I, like I had said, I felt like this you would enjoy this.
It was invigorating. It was inventive. It was ambitious. It was outstanding. It subverts those expectations. It has masterpiece twists. It has engaging characters, brilliant designs, amazing visuals. The music was actually really good as well.
Yeah.
Outstanding performances. And at the end of the day, the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the more I love it. It's a great movie, and I actually feel this should have been in contention for a lot of like below the line Oscar like awards, like visual effects, editing, sound design, sound mixing, production design, all those things were up this film's alley. And yeah, it is political, but I also loved the, not the guts, but like the, yeah, I don't give a fuck. Look, it's telegraphed. This is our future. People, be fucking idiots. Vote for Trump if you want to or not. This is what, this is what
we're gonna do. Can we do a single video without Trump?
Lock her up. but no, but that's the point here is we can't go on ignoring this any further, and this is what will happen. But it also, what feels so genuine is that everything about this is exactly what humans would do in this kind of situation.
Well, I think that that's what makes it scary. Like, when push comes to shove, these people were starving. Yeah, this, a lot of people would turn to cannibalism. They would, if they had the power, create this class system within this train because they had the power to do it and keep these people, you know, in this poverty-stricken state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, you know, let's all work together. No, you know, this would happen. But sort of different than the way you feel, I like the fact that I feel the political statements was more of a backdrop for the characters and stories.
I agree with her as well. I just feel like that's also important, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not the main focus. I'm never like one of those people that says it should be the main event. It was something on the side.
For me, even if I agree with your political feelings and statements, the second it becomes the main character instead of the actual characters is when I think the movie starts to fail.
Yeah,
and I don't think this film ever did that.
Yeah.
I just love it. I just think it's
also one more thing. It's also a great showcase for Chris Evans as an actor.
Yes.
I was reading something that the director of this film was having a hard time hiding Chris Evans' muscular physique because really, if you're there 17 years, how can you be that buff, really, and that strong? Because I think this came out the same year as... Did this come out the year of The Winter Soldier?
I think it did.
Because this came out like late 2013, early 2014.
I remember he was definitely working on some Captain America stuff around the same time that he was making Snowpiercer. And you can definitely tell because he's wearing these huge coats the entire time.
Yeah,
beanies. Like,
right.
You never see him shirtless or even close to that. He always has these big coats. No. And I'm really sad that this didn't get like a big theatrical release here.
Yeah, or an Oscar push, too. I think it would have been a great marketing campaign to push this movie because this is a great movie. I think it's kind of hard. What would you define it as far as a genre? Calling it a genre film because it has a mixture of these different things? Or
it's so hard to define, and that's another reason why I like it so much, because they just... He has a real talent for just throwing just like 3 or 5 or 6 or 100 genres into a film and just having it work.
Yeah.
And to me, that's when films... When you can't define them into a genre... That's when they really become interesting, I think. And this is one of those films.
This is a Korean film, right? Or no?
I don't... The director, I think, was Korean. Yeah.
But this was an international release. It just didn't get that big of a push here in America.
Yeah. I think it was more of an international film. Yeah. I have no idea the background. But most of the... All the actors are, you know, big-time American actors, really. And English.
Before we move on, as always, me being me, I have to put somebody on blast, namely critics who have offended me when it regards to something.
Oh my god.
So, I saw a lot of reviews about Chris Evans' performance. And they were complimenting this in a way as if they were surprised that this actor had depth and sophistication. They were almost kind of putting down the other Chris Evans' performance, to which
you
I say,
Captain America?
Go fuck yourselves. Okay, I think it is, like, we just did a freaking Marvel project where I just said, like, in 3 films, I think Chris Evans, like, emotionally and with a lot of depth, brought a great performance and a great fucking character, and I just don't understand, I don't understand why people feel the need to always downplay comic book movies or comic book characters. And it's like, for me, I'm not, like, a comic book guy. I never read comic books, but I see these as movies. And I've seen, I know I'm getting off on a tangent here, but it just goes off on this whole Chris Evans thing is that you didn't need to see anything else but Captain America. He is a great actor, and Snowpiercer only solidifies that for me. And it really gets me excited for what is to come in his future as an actor.
I'll defend them a little bit. If they were genuinely surprised that he was able to give a good performance, I think that's bullshit. Because I think in the past, he has shown he is a very good actor.
They were genuinely surprised.
But if your whole thing is like, I think this film is a better avenue to showcase his acting chops, I do think it was. Because it did give him more to do, I think. Especially that whole monologue at the end where he's talking about what he's done to survive.
Yeah, definitely.
The things he's dealing with. And just his facial expressions and the way he's just sort of falling for, what's his name again? Ed Harris's character. He's falling for his, the way he's trying to...
Give me...
Did you forget his name again, too?
Wilford,
yeah.
I keep having to look at my phone what the fuck that name is. I'm sorry. It's...
The way he's falling for Wilford's advances.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, overall, I own this film. That should tell you something that I genuinely just really enjoy the hell out of this film. I think it's great. Are there really any negatives? I think you can put little things here and there, but... Nothing where I have major issues with.
I can't think of any. And that's usually when you know that you've had a... This is a really good movie.
Yeah.
When you can't think of anything really negative to say. I want more movies like this.
Yes!
I want so many more movies
like this. Now you know why I'm always being a little bitch about it.
Well, you are a little bitch when it comes to that. I mean, I can be a bitch when it comes to Marvel. You can be a bitch when it comes to this. Because
That's true. I admit to that, yes.
That here's the reality. It's like... There were so many times when I was watching this and I felt like, you know, Hollywood, if you're listening, that's the kind of movie you should be making.
Yes.
Like original and creative and inventive and innovative and immersive. And this movie's great. This movie, this should be one of the decade's top players. Like easily for me, it's...
Decade? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... What have we learned?
That Chris Evans is a great actor and shouldn't be questioned because he's playing a comic
Peter's
book character because of
the
Peter's recommendations.
All right. I think that's our show.
Is it, though? I don't know. I kind of...
You have more?
No.
All right, then it is.
Okay. Well, this has been To the Table. Thank you, Peter, for recommending this movie to me. It seems as if your track record for recommending films has been spotless up until this point. I'm glad you also liked The Place Beyond the Pines.
I did.
It was an enjoyable film. But at the end of the day, one of the primary reasons we're doing this series is for us to get more immersed in cinema, but also for you guys listening back at home, we encourage you to go and look at these films because if you notice with the four films that we've discussed, which is Snowpiercer, A Place Beyond the Pines, Casino Royale, or The Witch, these are more or less obscure films that never get talked about.
Well, Casino Royale.
It's part of a franchise.
Yeah.
That movie... Well, we can go back and forth. At the end of the day, though, these are movies that we don't get a chance to talk about on the podcast nearly enough because we get so enthralled with all the latest comic book stuff. But I think this series is a great palate cleanser, if not refresher, for what other avenues of cinema are to be experienced. And we hope that you're enjoying this series as much as we are and that we are going to be cranking out a lot of content in the coming future when it comes to that. I know that Kyle is very excited as well as we are about the different kind of films that we're going to be able to see. And at the same time, I hope both of these movies that we discussed today, go out and see them. Mm-hmm. You can see Place Beyond the Pines on Netflix. I know that Snowpiercer is available for VOD, iTunes, and of course on Blu-ray if you so choose.
I think it used to be on Netflix.
It used to a long time ago.
Yeah, though. I don't think it is anymore.
I haven't seen it in a while. Otherwise, I probably would have seen it by then.
Yeah.
But, go out and do these things and also to make sure to keep it here under the spotlight with so many more programs when it comes to our regular podcasts as well as our audio commentaries. We have a savage, I would say, audio commentary we have up on the channel right now.
I had to say, I listened to it. I probably should have held back a bit. I didn't realize.
Did you listen to the whole thing?
I listened to like 1/4 of it, and I'm like, I really should have relaxed a bit.
The Suicide Squad audio commentary is what he was referring to. We were basically watching the entire movie and commenting to it. And like it wasn't even like a minute in, and you were already like yelling at the movie, and
I lost my voice.
No, you were saying that you were losing your voice. Like, you kept yelling throughout the whole thing. I also made this like 5-minute featurette to preview what it was, to kind of like a little bit of a highlights. You can also catch that on Facebook and on YouTube. So yeah, catch Red Spotlight on Facebook, YouTube, podcast.com, iTunes, and listen to that one, because that was particularly savage, as I would say. And also stay tuned for what Peter and I are doing on the BNC channel, the Marvel Project, which we're going to be basically our phase two of our programming, where we kind of review the remaining films that we haven't done so, as well as the TV shows. And we are...
Feature ones, like Thor 3 right. and Black Panther.
Exactly. Like, basically, everything MCU, we're there. And we're also in... in early talks to for phase three, as
we get
the
lawyers involved and paper signed.
Exactly,
and
we have to get some people to sign off on this. We're thinking about doing X-Men and Spider-Man, which is non-MCU Marvel, for phase three in the not too distant future. Which,
if it wears a cape, we might talk about it.
But anyway, keep it here at Red Spotlight Entertainment. Thank you, Peter, so much for joining me for doing this wonderful To the Table. That's what we're going to call it. I am Alexis Soto here for Red Spotlight. And until next time, make sure to catch the outro song. I was going to say catch Tori Kelly and Kermit, but that's not the outro for this podcast. So whatever it was, theme music, play now.